And our very special guest tonight, Richard Sauter, will talk a little bit more about mind control and get his take on what he believes is a secret space program as well. And we'll talk about some other issues that will affect all of us on Coast to Coast AM. This propaganda of mind control, Richard, do they go to school to learn this? How do they learn this stuff?
Yeah, well, the powers that be that control this planet, or at least are trying to control the planet, do go to school in a sense, in that they have made a very thorough study of human psychology and our emotional makeup, and they very much use classical Pavlovian conditioning. They put it to practical use in the social arena to control the population. The 9/11 attacks are classic example of that, to propagandize people and create tremendous fear in the watching people, the people who see others dying by the thousands in front of their eyes on television. And this caused a tremendous wave of fear in the global human consciousness, which persists to this day. And from time to time, they tweak it by having other terror alerts or causing other terror incidents or threatening to or telling people that they may occur. And from time to time, they actually stage other events. I fear that something like this Operation Blackjack, which the Telegraph newspaper last year presented in more or less comic book form on their website, could happen. And under that scenario, the Telegraph paper was newspaper in England was simply saying that there could be a 9/11 style terror event only involving nuclear devices, where the powers that be might effectively decide to sacrifice a few cities, maybe in the United States or in England or elsewhere, Mexico, Canada, wherever. It could be anywhere in the world, and then blame the destruction on the boogeyman of the day, or yeah, whether it would be Venezuela, Cuba, or North Korea, or Iran, or the Taliban, or Al-Qaeda, or anyone else.
That would be the push for total control, Richard, if that ever happened.
Yes, it would be. And then they would say, we've been telling you how bad the Venezuelans were, the Korean, North Koreans were, or the Iranians, or whoever. And this is proof positive. Now we need to launch all of our nuclear missiles at them and wipe them out. I'm telling you, these people are vicious, George.
But here's the problem, though. The leaders of those countries that you just mentioned are the same as the people who would want to start the trouble.
Yes, in many cases. Yeah. And it's important to understand that what we're dealing with here in some ways is could be understood as absolutely as sinister, even demonic, in that these are not ordinary people. They're psychopathic. They're badly twisted, George.
I know a lot of people from Iran, who live in the California area.
Yes.
Who left that country during the Shah's regime.
Yes.
But they still have family there.
Yes.
And these people don't want war.
No, they don't.
They want a Western life. They want to live free. They want to be peaceful.
In fact, I don't understand the policies of this country, because what you say is absolutely true with regard to Iran and most other countries and most other people, as far as that goes.
It's these wacko leaders of all these countries that are out to create the mess that we're in right now.
Yes, there's a problem with psychopathology in high places.
Yes.
And I say again, many of these people, they're pathological liars. We certainly see this in our own government, and you can see it in other governments too. They're hyper-violent. They're control freaks to the nth degree. They don't have empathy or sympathy or compassion. They're lacking in normal human affection.
They are Machiavellian. There's no doubt.
Very much so. Very much so. They would. I read an interview with one pundit who was remarking about the sharks on Wall Street. This was a year or two ago, and he made the remark that here you're dealing with a sort of person who would microwave their own mother if they thought it would profit them personally.
Let's talk a little bit about the secret space program, Richard. What's going on there? Tell me about some of your research into it.
Well, let me tell you first how I started to get into that research.
All right.
I didn't even think about it at all until, well, it was about 1981 or so. As I mentioned at the outset of this broadcast, I have previously staged nonviolent, peaceful demonstrations on nuclear missile silos. The first one was in Arkansas in 1981 when the Air Force used to have the huge city busting Titan II nuclear missiles down there with the 3 and 4 megaton warheads on them. Well, I went over the fence onto one of those nuclear missile silos just north of Conway, Arkansas, and was jailed in the small town of Jacksonville, Arkansas, near Little Rock Air Force Base. While laying in jail one night, Robert Monroe spoke to me telepathically. And I believe Art Bell interviewed Robert Monroe a time or two or three. I'm not sure. Did you ever?
I never did. He passed on before I had a chance to get him.
Okay. Yeah, I think he died about in the late 1990s or so. But anyway, I knew Robert Monroe slightly. I was a slight acquaintance of his outwardly. Inwardly, for whatever reason, from time to time, he would appear to me telepathically or in paranormal, out-of-body type states, and do different things and tell me some amazing things. Why he did this, I don't know. So I did have some communication with Robert Monroe for whatever reason. And on this occasion, he downloaded some information to me telepathically, and he started out speaking to me as I was laying there in my cell in the middle of the night. And I thought, well, this is strange. Why is Robert Monroe talking to me? I didn't know why. I just let him go on. He began like he does on his tapes, which you can buy to this day, by saying, "Hello, this is Robert Monroe." And then he immediately launched into what he had to tell me. He said, 30 years ago, when men first began to go into space, they discovered, and at that point I was thinking, okay, this is 1981, so 30 years ago is 1951. Now we're told the first men went into space in about 1961. So he's now telling me the space program really began 10 years earlier. So he went on to say that there's a certain pronounced esoteric aspect of the manned space program that hasn't been revealed publicly, but which is evidently important. And it has to do with the fact that there's more to getting into space than just putting human beings in high-tech tomato cans and putting them on top of high-powered Roman candles and blasting them up into space. There's a certain the terminology he used was unusual. He used language frequently when he spoke to me. He would use the words that we all use in everyday discourse, but he would use them in novel ways, such that it was one of the most unusual ways of speaking that I've ever encountered. I would say it was neuro-linguistic programming, but far beyond that, to a whole different level. Anyway, the gist of it was that there are certain, for want of better words, it seemed to me, astrological aspects of going into space and spiritual aspects. In other words, there was a certain ceremonial, there's a certain ceremonial, sacred side of space travel and of space faring that we're not told about publicly by NASA and the other space agencies. I think Richard Hoagland has latched on to part of this. I mean, you've interviewed Hoagland, and so did Art Bell, and he, for years, has been talking about this esoteric symbolism that keeps popping up again and again in NASA's decisions, not only of when to launch, but when they land their spacecraft or how they orbit, and on and on. So some of it does leak through. And Richard Hoagland has detected some of it. Some of it has to do with ancient Egyptian mythology, religion and spirituality, and things like that. And it has a very heavy influence at NASA. Well, that's when I began to understand that there was a secret space program, because Bob Monroe told me so in a telepathic mind-to-mind communication. I could only speculate about his motivation, why Bob Monroe would tell me things like this. I don't know. I didn't know him well outwardly, but that's what happened. Well, I began to look into it in later years, in the 1990s, and I cover this topic in the Richard Sauter briefing, though I don't mention the Robert Monroe episode. What I've discovered is that just going from the public open record, without regard to any secret information, just from the public open record, already starting back in the 1950s, the Air Force, United States Air Force, had a program called Dinosaur. Now, Dinosaur was intended to put an astronaut, not one astronaut, but multiple astronauts, up in space using Air Force rockets and capsules and astronauts. And Neil Armstrong was a dinosaur astronaut. In fact, Neil Armstrong came to NASA and switched over to the Gemini program in the 1960s. Actually, I think he came in, I think it was 61, 62, 63, somewhere through there. But he came in from the Air Force's dinosaur astronaut program. So Neil Armstrong was first in the Air Force's astronaut corps, and then switched from there to NASA's astronaut corps.
Did some of these people know about the secret space program? You know, we've got a friend, Richard Jerry Purnell, who's a science and science fiction writer, and he was intricately involved in a lot of these space shows, space stories at the time. Do you think many of the astronauts at the time, the Mercury astronauts, the Gemini astronauts, the Apollo astronauts, did they know about this secret program?
I don't know. What I can tell you is that when I was a young boy, I grew up in that part of Virginia where the Mercury astronauts trained, and of course some of them went on to be Gemini astronauts. And so my father actually knew some of them because he was a local news photographer, and would be sent out regularly on public affairs occasions to photograph them training or at publicity events. So he got to know them, the Mercury 7, on a first-name basis, and even knew where a number of them lived. And so they lived pretty nearby to my family home, and we would sometimes on Sunday drive by, and he would say, look, that's where, you know, Gus Grissom lives, this is where Alan Bean lives, et cetera. It was interesting. So I kind of grew up in that milieu in Tidewater, Virginia, not too far from Langley Air Force Base, where they were training at that time. And I think some of them probably knew. I think Neil Armstrong knows quite a bit. I think he knew a great deal already back in the 50s and knows even more now. And I wish Neil would tell us what he knows, because we paid for him to learn everything that he knows. And I would say, from my perspective, his allegiance is not to the liars who swore him to secrecy, but to us, who he, in theory, actually represented. But yes, I think some of them did know. Others of them maybe not. But I think at least some of them did, especially the ones who would have been involved in high-level initiatic secret societies like the Freemasons, as was Buzz Aldrin, for example. Remember, Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon with Neil Armstrong.
That's right. He was number two.
Yes, and he actually, Buzz Aldrin was then a 32-degree Mason, I believe, and maybe higher now for all I know, but at least he was 32-degree, which is a very high level in Freemasonry, and actually conducted a Masonic ceremony on the moon for the for the 33rd degree Masonic temple that's in Washington, D.C., just north of the White House. So, yes, some of them have.
What kind of a ceremony would that be?
I don't know. I wasn't there, but it was a Masonic ceremony, and he took a Masonic flag with him to the moon and brought it back to that temple and delivered it to the temple. So there were other NASA astronauts, and Richard Hoagland is right about this. There was, at least at the beginning, and may still be for all I know, but certainly back in the 50s and 60s, and there was a heavy Masonic influence at NASA. But moving along, the Air Force then publicly announced that it was shutting down the Dinosaur program after having spent a very large amount of money, after having trained their own astronaut corps and developed their own technology, just said, well, you know what, we're not going to do it after all. And then in the 1960s, they went through the whole episode again in the mid-1960s with the so-called MOLE program, Manned Orbiting Laboratory, where again the idea was for the American military to have a parallel space program, which would have operated separately apart from NASA, but side by side with the Gemini program, which was then underway. Well, once again, after developing hardware and rockets and training astronauts and spending a very large amount of money, the Air Force very publicly announced, well, we decided not to do this after all. And would you believe this happened a third time again, this time in the 1980s, when in 1989, the Air Force suddenly announced that they were shutting down a space program that before that had basically been secret and not revealed to the public, which was a parallel space shuttle program, albeit run entirely by the United States military. And in fact, they had a separate parallel astronaut corps with 32 astronauts based in Los Angeles. Now, this was apart from NASA and apart from the NASA astronaut corps. But the Air Force publicly announced, you know what, we're going to shut this down. We spent billions of dollars. We've developed our own launch facility at Vandenberg. We've trained our astronaut corps, but we've decided not to do it after all. We'll just go with the NASA shuttle. So at least three times they've done that, publicly developed their own separate space program and then shut it down, which I find very strange. I strongly suspect that they did that to deflect attention from an ongoing clandestine military-industrial espionage space program. Now, I'm not the only person to say this, but there's a lot of suggestive evidence that that's going on. I might remind you that the English hacker, computer hacker, Gary McKinnon, yeah. I believe is still in custody, yes, in England, or at least in under threat of being extradited to the United States to face a potential 70-year jail term in a federal prison here for allegedly hacking in to United States military and government computer systems, where he says he saw evidence, he saw files alluding directly to a secret space fleet with a non-terrestrial officer corps. And the United States government has come down on his head like a bag of hammers.
I mean, he said he was looking for UFO information when he
was, but he stumbled across this other information that all but says that there's a secret space program run very quietly by the American military, and they have off-planet vessels and non-terrestrial officer corps.
They have said, Richard, if he gets extradited, that he could commit suicide. He's that, you know, he's that tenuous right now.
Well, I mean, you can understand. He's a middle-aged man. I think he's in his 40s, and he's facing a 70-year sentence, which effectively is a life sentence. I mean, who in their right mind would regard that prospect with joy? It would be a grim scenario for anyone. The more so since so many other hackers either get a slap on the wrist or go unprosecuted whatsoever. I believe he really did stumble across some information the American government doesn't want to come public, and so they want to hang him out to dry.
No doubt about that. We'll be back in a moment. Hey, for just pennies a day, you can become a member of Coast Insiders Streamlink. You can enjoy that and have some fun with that. Podcasting and downloads and special apps as well, Android and BlackBerry soon to be. And by the way, the After Dark magazine is available to you as well, 12 monthly issues. You can call a toll-free number for that. That's 1-888-261-6392 or subscribe online at coasttocoastam.com. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Richard Sauter, and we'll talk more about some of these incredible things he's uncovered next on Coast to Coast AM. Richard, do you think the secret space program includes having bases on the moon?
Yes, I do, on the moon and on Mars. And I think that it includes having exotic science fiction-like technology, perhaps including a time travel and a fast and light travel component, or at the very least, an appreciable subliminal speed capacity now, which means maybe going half the speed of light or two-thirds the speed of light. In other words, I think that they can go real fast, maybe even bend space-time, and that's based on the comments that Ben Rich, who was director of Lockheed Skunk Works, made when he was speaking to an alumni engineering group in California back in the mid-1990s at UCLA, I believe. He said that we have the technology to take ET home. And when he said that, he showed a slide during his presentation that depicted a black saucer-like craft zooming upward through the Earth's atmosphere. And he also alluded on another occasion to having black budget UFO-like technology. So I don't think there's any question that it exists, and this parallel space program evidently has been ongoing for a long time. In fact, I believe it may have begun already back in the early 50s, as Bob Monroe alluded to me in Arkansas in 1981. And I'll tell you why. During the course of my research, as I said, I went deeply into the technical research, into the technical literature, as few people ever do. And I went back decades and combed through it very finely. I noticed that there was research being done into electrohydrodynamics and electrogravitics and things like that back in the 1950s. And about the mid-50s to early 60s, it all dried up and went away, such that I found virtually no mention of it in the literature after that. And I thought that was very puzzling. At the time, I thought, well, perhaps they made some breakthroughs and took it black so that you wouldn't find any more mention of it in the open literature. That remains my strong supposition to the present day. My guess is already back in the 50s, there was some breakthroughs made in flying saucer-style technology, and probably along with these new technologies, the engineers and scientists, physicists, what have you, discovered that when you work with the natural energies of the universe in a little different way than they had been to that point, that you warp or twist or bend or collapse space-time, and you can do funny things with it. It becomes malleable. So I suspect that this has been ongoing for a long time, and I think part of what Bob Monroe was trying to tell me is that the sacred geometry comes into play, that you're really working with the conscious framework of the universe at that point, of the cosmos, and that you have to do it in a reverential and respectful way, that it can't be forced. Maybe it can be, beguiled or seduced, if you will, but you can't force it in the sense that we do with so much of the technology we have now. So much of the technology we have now is violent and intrusive, explosive and destructive. We see it reflected in all kinds of ways in our society. And I think what he was telling me is there are different ways of getting things done by working with the actual life force of the universe in a spiritual sense, at a with a real sense of religious awe and respect and reverence. And I suspect that that's what was going on as a big part of what he was trying to tell me. And I think that you then have, we're living in a dream world, and we're not being told the truth about a great many things, including that. And my position is we should be. Moreover, we deserve to know. It's our planet. We live here. We have every right to know. I think we will know. I think a lot of this is on the verge of breaking open. We haven't heard the real whistleblowers yet. We will soon. One of the things that's keeping all of this quiet and under hush-hush control is this very criminal economic system we have. And that, too, is going to have to come to an end. In fact, it's ending now. We need a jubilee year, George, of forgiveness, of sweeping forgiveness of debt across the board. I mean, federal student loans, all of these corrupt debt instruments and financial instruments that have been rammed down people's throats, which are really fraudulent. People have been lied to by the major financial institutions on Wall Street, the big banks, the Federal Reserve. It's a massive Ponzi scheme. It is just criminal beyond belief. And they're not going to stop. They are the ones running the Ponzi scheme. They are the ones, frankly, stealing from us by the trillions of dollars. If it's going to come to an end, we, the people, are going to have to say, hey, you're robbing us. It's a national mugging is what it amounts to. It's a shakedown of the American people, and it's what's keeping this whole vile, and it is a vile circus going, and we're being played. I'm tired of being played, George.
Richard, I'm going to ask you to give us, you're not a predictor. I mean, you're not a prophetic person like that, but I'm going to ask you, based on the things you've investigated, to give us your predictions of the next 5 to 10 years.
Massive change in every sphere of human experience on this planet and in this country. Some of it will be very, very sudden and wide and dramatic in scope. Now, those can be bad, violent, evil, destructive, murderous events. They can also be magically enchanting, wonderfully uplifting, illuminating experiences. And we may find both. In fact, I expect both to happen. Some of the bad ones could include, I'm sorry, but these evil creatures that want to subjugate us all have a lot of nuclear weapons in their control, and by hook or by crook, I know the possibility exists that they can be used. I hope they won't be, but frankly, there's a very real possibility that could happen, perhaps including this year. If it does, I want people to keep in mind that they're going to be lied to about who did it and why, and just don't participate in it. I think the sanest thing that people can do is to withdraw their participation in this from this military insanity, whether it's nuclear war or so-called conventional war. And that's going to be one of the good things that's going to happen. In response to all of these wars and false flag terror events by the United States and by others too, people more and more are just going to reject war. They're more and more going to see through the lies and say, we're just not going to go and kill and be killed for you anymore. It's insane. We won't do it. We won't give our children up for this. We won't give our husbands up for this. And so you'll see people more and more turning away from warfare, and that'll be a good development for the human race. You're going to see that over the next 5, 10, 15 years. I believe that the secret space program is more and more going to come into view, such that it won't be able to be hidden. The fact that we're talking about it now indicates that that process has already begun. It'll continue. I think the underground and undersea bases will become much more publicly known in coming months and years. In fact, that has already begun starting in the mid-1990s with my research. I've been on this show several times over the last 15 years. I don't know how many. I couldn't count them up, but several times. And I thank you for that. And, of course, I've been on other radio and television shows as well. And so millions of people are now familiar with this topic who weren't even aware of it at all 15 years ago, as I wasn't myself before I began doing this research. So that's going to continue to come more and more into public awareness. I think knowledge of extraterrestrials and the fact that there are many planets throughout the galaxy with life on them, there are many planets probably with intelligent life forms on them, and that there are also planets with other human populations, other human subspecies, if you will, closely related to us, our cousins, our galactic cousins. I think more and more this will come into public knowledge. I think more and more there will be a real direct knowledge that there is a creator of the universe. Call that creator what you will. He or she or it has gone by many names through the years. I don't think the name is so important as is the reality that there's a vast creative principle or force or intelligence that animates the universe, brings it into being, and keeps it going. And I think there would be a greater and more conscious knowledge of the divine, of cosmic, of the universal intelligence and being as we go forward. I think there will be a much greater sense of the earth as a living entity that gives us life and that we must cherish, because it's our mommy. The earth is our mommy, George. Without the earth, we don't go anywhere.
Who are these matrix control agents you've talked about?
Oh, boy, that's a tough question. Well, let me say this. Some of them, or at least one level of them, we can publicly see. They would be, for example, the Federal Reserve would be one. The Federal Reserve Bank, the people who control this really offensive and oppressive economic order. The Bank of England, all of the powerful so-called central banks, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and then, of course, houses like Goldman Sachs, groups like the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission. There's an organization called the Group of 30, which is a very elite global group of super powerful high-level financiers and bankers. They actually have a website, www.group30.org.
They have their own website?
Yeah, GROUP30.org. They're an overarching consultative body for major financial institutions and central banks all over the planet.
Do they mention who they are?
Oh yeah, you can see the names of quite a lot of their members, some of whom you will recognize. So these would be some of the powers that be. Now there may be others who are even more powerful and not as publicly known. In fact, I suspect there are, but some of them certainly are recognizable. And we can also say the powers that be have certain geographical centers on this planet from which they project their influence. Of course, Lower Manhattan and Wall Street would be one such place. Washington, D.C. would be another one. The City of London would be one. Now, by the City of London, I mean the so-called Square Mile.
Dubai? Seems like a lot of people are going out that way.
Dubai would be a place. It is. Hong Kong would be another place. Someplace like Shanghai in China would be one. Frankfurt, Germany, Strasbourg, France, Brussels, Belgium, where the European Union has its offices and administrative centers. Tel Aviv is one, definitely. Tokyo is another one. So there are many of these around the globe, but these are some of the major ones. And great power is projected from these centers. Really evil power. I won't beat around the bush. Look at what happened in the Gulf of Mexico. That's a kill shot. It wasn't an accident. If you really dig into it and read the investigative reporting that's been done on the internet, and some very good digging has been done by independent investigative reporters, BP knew long before that well blew that it was gassy and it was dangerous and that they were skating on the edge, and still they kept drilling.
They took it all the way to the edge, didn't
they? They took it right to the edge until the thing blew, and there was plenty of previous warning, days, even weeks, even months in advance. They knew what they were dealing with, and still they did it, which begs the question as to whether it was actually done on purpose. And the American government regulatory agencies and oversight agencies let them continue, the Minerals Management Service and the Interior Department, the Coast Guard, and others let them continue. So I don't buy the story that it was an accident, number one. And number two, I don't think we yet have been given the truth about the extremely destructive scale of this episode. And number three, I'm not satisfied that it has been satisfactorily concluded yet, number four, even if it has been, and there's no further seepage of methane and oil, which remains to be proven to my satisfaction, what has already been dumped into the Gulf and been mixed with this so-called, what is it, Corexit?
Corexit,
that's been sprayed by the millions of gallons, has created an ecological and oceanographic nightmare of unimaginable proportions that will be with us for years to come. And it is spinning off and will continue to spin off in very ugly directions that we can't even foresee at this point.
I agree. What keeps driving you, Richard? What keeps pushing you?
I want to find out what's really going on the planet that I inhabit. I have tremendous intellectual curiosity. And I also have a strong sense of fair play and justice. I would like to see people treated fairly and equitably. And that's not happening. I'm really bothered by the wars, tremendously so. They're dragging us down. This tremendous economic oppression we're experiencing has to stop. For the love of God, it has to stop. I feel a tremendous affinity with the human race. I was born here. I have human birth papers, George, on this planet, which makes me one of us. So I have a vested interest in what happens here. That in and of itself is a powerful motive for me to continue. And we've got to have a jubilee year. They're not going to let us go. Slave owners never voluntarily relinquish control over their slaves. If you're going to get out of slavery, you have to run away. They're not going to free us of our debts. We're going to have to free ourselves. And we need a jubilee year. The time has come. In fact, that's part of our tradition, at least in theory, going back thousands of years, that periodically, for just this reason of economic and social fairness, that periodically the playing field or the playing board is leveled so that everyone can start with a fresh slate, so that you don't have concentration of political and economic power and just the few hands that oppresses everyone else with an iron fist. And that's where the jubilee year came from. In ancient times, it was supposed to happen every 50 years.
Where do people get the Richard Sauter briefing book?
Well, they can order it right off your website and from Amazon.com. And if they don't see it in their bookstore, the local bookseller, they can ask for it, as is true of my other books. They can go to keyholepublishing.com. That's one word, keyholepublishing.com. And there's also a link on your website for that. They can also look for my other books at Amazon.com.
You ready for phone calls, Richard?
I would love to.
All right, we're going to do this. Next hour, we're going to open up the phone lines for Richard Sauter. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Full hour to go with Richard Sauter. All the things we've talked about, we'll take your calls next.